Hello, it is April 17th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 5.4 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. As I mentioned last week, hope you enjoyed the hockey preview podcast already. Things are wrong. The Blues have lost. D'Alessio said that they were going to win. The Blues were going to go to the finals. They're already down 1-0. Everything's falling apart. John Hamm is so angry. But we have to sneak in an NBA podcast because the playoffs start Saturday, and I cannot not talk to Lee Ellis. Lee Ellis is, of course, the co-host of The Starters on the NBA TV. He says that he is the sixth man. I think that is either in – I think that's low, if you ask me. But anyway, we're going to preview the playoffs tourney by tourney, team by team, matchup by matchup. And then we're going to get out to you as quick as we can today so you can listen to it before the game start on Saturday. And then we will be back with the beginning of the baseball podcast, not this Sunday. The first one we're going to tape is a week from Sunday on the 26th between me and Allison Futter. We will be doing regularly weekly shows previewing baseball after talking about baseball after that, and then with occasional fill-ins with maybe I'll try to get Lee on an NBA Finals preview. We'll see what happens. But right now, let's get into it. NBA playoffs preview, Lee Ellis. Let's go. All right, hello. Thank you, Lee, for coming on with me. I want to get right into it because the playoffs start tomorrow. And first off, thanks. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I got so excited to get into this, I forgot to acknowledge where you like wave and say hello. I'm on the show. Hello. All right, I'm ready to get into this because the playoffs start tomorrow, and I did not want to have the playoffs start without talking to you first. So we're gonna start right now. We're gonna start with the East because that's the one that people will be able to hit the 15-second forward button more easily when they need to on the podcast, because those are the less interesting ones. Certainly, I made the argument. I thought you were very kind to send out my playoff rootability rankings yesterday. Mm-hmm. My friend John Heilman at Bloomberg Politics and New York Magazine is so angry with me because he is one of those Brooklyn hipsters who bought season tickets packets for the next 10 years. Prokhorov was going to put a winner and going to make this team exciting for the next 10 years. And now he's realizing how much he regrets that decision. They play the Hawks in the first round. I argue that the Nets are the least interesting, least rootable team in the playoffs. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree, yeah. It's been a pretty rough season there in Brooklyn. I mean, the one thing I will say about Prokhorov, though, is you want an owner who goes all in for everything, and he did that. And we always knew, we always suspected it was a pretty short-sighted gamble he took when he grabbed, you know, Pierce and Garnett and Jason Terry from the Boston Celtics and gave up all those draft picks. But at least you want an owner who's like, right, I'm going for it right now. Now, he did that, it didn't work out, and now the Nets are going to pay heavily for it. But, you know, you would rather, I guess, have at least an owner who takes that approach rather than one who's, like, happy to just kind of maybe make up the numbers, you know, squeeze into the playoffs year in, year out, and never really be a chance. They were a chance, it didn't work out, and now this is the problem. But, yeah, Brooklyn, they've been a tough team to watch all season long, and I don't expect them to really put up much of a fight against Atlanta because they haven't shown that they've got much of a real resilience to any sort of pressure. They sort of crumble pretty easily. They get blown out when they shouldn't. I mean, they had a couple of losses just this week where, you know, Milwaukee absolutely smoked them, and then the Bulls came in and smoked them in Brooklyn, and they were lucky to survive, really. They had to beat Orlando on the last day, and they did that, and they got in. But even that wasn't really a convincing win. So, you know, they're going up against the Atlanta Hawks, who drilled them this season as well, really had no problem with them. So I expect that series to be one of the least interesting as far as competitiveness goes, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of people watching the Nets anyway. So Atlanta hopefully will convert this great regular season they've had into an early sort of, I think I said sweep in our show yesterday, and I think that's why. I think the Hawks have just got too many weapons, they're going to be too motivated, and I think that the Nets just don't really show me that they've got enough fight in them to get through a series.
Yeah, you know, I feel obliged to point out to you because, you know, you and I have actually both lived in the Georgia area for a very short amount of time. So people that have been here a long time keep reminding me the Hawks are usually very boring. Like, the Hawks are usually, like, not only not good, but, like, really dull. I wrote the other day that, like, games in the past at Phelps Arena have felt like, this felt like what it is, like games inside a mall in a lot of ways. But it hasn't been like that at all this year.
No, this year has been completely different. This is our second season down here in Atlanta, and the first season was, you know, they made the playoffs last year, but it was a very, very tough team to watch. They were very boring. They didn't have any real excitement. But this year, it's been the complete opposite. Mike Budenholzer's really got them playing fantastic team basketball, really eye-pleasing basketball. Everyone gets involved. We had, obviously, Kyle Korver's had a fantastic season, but you know, Jeff Teague was really, really good this year, and I think he only averaged 16 points a game in the end, but that doesn't really reflect well on the impact that he had on the game. You know, he really you know, runs that team very, very well. Al Horford, you know, he was an all-star again. And Paul Millsap, I mean, Paul Millsap's never been a guy, kind of highlight reel type of guy, but if you really appreciate the way that he works in that system, then you have a greater understanding of how the Hawks have been successful. So, yeah, this year has been a complete, you know, U-turn on where the Hawks have been in the past. The games have been exciting. The arena, the Phillips Arena, the Fortress, I like to call it, that's just been absolutely packed for a lot of the season. And the fans have been really getting into it because that was the criticism that, you know, fans kind of turned up to Hawks games in the past, but they never really got into it, and they didn't have a really exciting team to cheer for. But this year they have. They've had a really, really fun team, and they deserve all the success they've had so far because they play great basketball on offense. You know, it's very easy to watch stuff, and they play really good defense as well, and they've got the results. So, you know, now they're in the playoffs, and now they have to sort of cash that in and show that it wasn't just a regular season, sort of a daydream, that they are a legitimate team, and it's, you know, it's not just a sort of a flashy team, and they get their first opportunity on Sunday. And you know, I'm really hoping that the Hawks can get deep into the playoffs and show everybody that this was, you know, a legitimate Eastern Conference contender.
All right. Well, I think the only real downside for them playing Brooklyn is, of course, it gives the opportunity for the NYPD to take out several more Hawks players before this series goes along. So that's something to keep in mind. That's a reason to be cheering for Indiana, I guess. But alas. All right, next we go to Toronto and D.C. This is a strange one because I feel like if you would have told me before the season that Toronto and Washington would be playing in the first round, I would have thought, I think it would have been really exciting. It would have felt like these two kind of teams that were starting to move upward and starting to put it together excited to see a team move out of that round and get excited about that. But the second half has been so kind of dreary for both of these teams. It feels less exciting than we might have wanted it to be.
Yeah, it does, and I think that's the series that we all found the most difficult to predict because you can really make a case for both teams, but you can also make a case against both teams. And, you know, the Raptors have home court advantage again. They had that last season, and really I hope to see that the Raptors learn from last season. You know, that first game against Brooklyn, they came out, they took some bad shots, and the Nets stole game one. And even though the Raptors actually led 3-2 and had a chance to close that series out twice, you really felt that the Raptors kind of were always playing catch-up in that series. And that's so critical for a team that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience is to get out early and have a lead and try not to have to overcome the other team. So that's what I want to see from the Raptors this year. Do they know that and do they understand that they really have to make sure that they take care of home court advantage for these first two games, win them, and then go to Washington? Because, you know, Washington is still a good team. John Wall was an all-star this year. He's been a fantastic player. You know, he's still not the greatest shooter in the world, but he really knows how to get the ball in the basket when his team needs him to. And Bradley Beal's back healthy enough anyway for them. He's missed a lot of the season due to injury. You know, Gort, Patton, Nene, those sort of guys. You know, I've talked about them in the past where they are capable of having an influence on a game, but they kind of drift in and out of it a little bit. And of course, Paul Pierce was the villain last year for the Brooklyn Nets against the Raptors, and you know that he's already had a few comments in the media about the Raptors saying that he's not really scared of them and all that. And that's, you know, that's a veteran just trying to sort of get under the skin of the Raptors, and it worked. And, you know, now the Raptors have to go out there and prove that they are the better team. And it's going to be it's probably not going to be a great series to watch. It's probably going to be a bit sloppy at times and you know, not necessarily lots of, you know, fantastic highlight plays. But if the Raptors can really grind it out and get that, as I say, that keep their home court advantage and give themselves the best chance they can to win at home without having to sort of chase Washington early, then I think that could be the decisive factor. But, you know, I'm not convinced by either team right now. And it could just come down to one or two close plays towards the end of games that could sort of swing that series. And if it goes for the Raptors, then great. But if it doesn't, then, you know, then it opens the door for the Wizards. And, you know, the Wizards are one of those teams that if they, you know, you mentioned that if they play the way they did earlier in the season, it's going to be tough for the Raptors. But again, the Raptors played very well early on as well. Kyle Lowry was fantastic. And Kyle Lowry is the key probably for the Raptors. He sort of has struggled since the All-Star weekend. He hasn't been playing a lot. And when he has been playing, his numbers and percentages have been dropping off. So, you know, it's a crucial series for both teams because they came into the series, they came into this year really hoping to build on last year, and they've kind of found themselves in the same sort of spot they were last season. And one of them's obviously going to advance, and one of them's going to go home and probably feel that this season was a bit of a lost season.
Is there a danger for whatever team that loses this series to make some wider changes and maybe get away from what the initial plan was, or maybe just fire the coach, I guess, in Washington's case? Is there a danger that the team that loses this series is going to look a lot different next year?
It's probably a little bit hard to say right now. I guess you have to see how the series plays out. I mean, if it goes seven games, then I think it's probably less likely there's going to be sort of drastic changes. But let's say the Wizards come out and sweep the Raptors, then obviously Dwayne Casey's probably going to be in a bit of trouble there. I mean, he just signed a new extension coming into this season. So, you know, Masai Ujiri's obviously going to have to keep his eye on that. But there's probably more pressure actually on Masai Ujiri right now because he came into the Raptors and kind of got lucky with that trade, you know, getting rid of Rudy Gay, and the Raptors turned their season around. But he didn't really have to do a whole lot else other than that. You know, Kyle Lowry signed his extension in the offseason, so they were able to sort of keep that team together. But now, you know, like the Raptors, we all know, the Raptors have been a competitive team now for two seasons, but you want to see them really take that next step, and they probably are still one player away from being able to seriously challenge the Cleveland Cavaliers. And, you know, whether or not that comes back to the coach or it's on playing personnel or just the development of players, you know, Terrence Ross and Jonas Valanciunas have made some strides, but probably not taken the big leap that the Raptors were hoping for. So it definitely is a funny series, and there probably will be some fallout. I mean, Randy Whitman's been under a lot of pressure recently, certainly because the Wizards have been on the slide. And I just don't feel there's a great relationship between Whitman and his players. But again, you know, playoffs, you know, can really change a general manager's kind of point of view and his way of approaching things. So if both teams put in a competitive series and goes to seven, and you know the teams kind of battle each other down to the wire, then maybe coaches will be safe. But if there's a blowout one way, then you have to probably think that one of the coaches won't be there next season.
Okay, who's your pick?
Well, I said the Raptors in seven. I'm basically hedging there. I'm going, you know, I could have easily said the Wizards in seven, but I'll stick with what I said on the show, and I'll say the Raptors in seven. And I mainly tilted in their favour because I have home court advantage, and I have some faith that Kyle Lowry will make sure that the Raptors get home in this series, even though he hasn't been playing great for the last month or two.
All right, we go into Cleveland-Boston. I will say that even though Boston had a losing record, they don't feel like they had a losing record in the way that Brooklyn had a losing record. It's kind of exciting to have Boston here. I almost feel bad it's Boston. Like, usually you when you have this young kind of team that gets hot late and feels like they've got some energy around them, you it's kind of a shame. Like, oh yeah, it's Boston, the team that has like 80 championships. Great, congratulations. It's weird to think of Boston against Cleveland, and Boston is the plucky underdog and Cleveland is the established whatever. But certainly, I'm glad to see Boston here. I feel like they're an interesting kind of challenge for Cleveland. I feel like we're excited about Boston on one hand, you know, maybe they get a game or not. I'm more curious, where does Cleveland, I know they've been hot late, does this feel like a team that's rounding into shape to win a title, or do you think they still got some things to solve during the playoffs?
Well, they're not probably as polished as they want to be right now. They certainly got hot there for sort of after the break when LeBron came back from that sort of sabbatical he took mid-season. And then, you know, there was a couple of other issues there, but I really think that LeBron knows how to sort of pace himself now that he's in the playoffs. And I think the Celtics, it's been a great story for them, to be fair. I mean, they traded away Rondo, they traded away Jeff Green, and you sort of felt that they were going for the full-on tank mode there, but Brad Stevens got them organized and got them playing really good defense and got them competitive again, and that's how they got into the playoffs. And that's why I expect that they'll be the same against Cleveland. I think Brad Stevens will try to bring the game down to a level where it's not too far so that Cavs can't get out in transition and just sort of blow them away. But the big problem is they just simply don't have the talent to match Cleveland. And you know, I mean, you look at Kyrie and Kevin Love and LeBron James. You know, J.R. Smith's been fantastic too since he came over in the trade. And when you compare that to Evan Turner and Marcus Smart and, you know, Solinger and Kelly Olynyk, you know, good, solid players having decent seasons, but they simply can't hang with those other guys from the Cavs. So I think that the Cavs will probably use this for a bit of a tune-up, really, for going deeper into the playoffs. And you know, I expect them to face Atlanta in the conference finals, and I think that what they're going to do is is just, you know, make sure LeBron and those guys aren't playing heavy, heavy minutes so that they've still got some more run in their legs as the series goes on and as the playoffs go on. So, you know, David Blatt as well, he's never been in this position with an NBA team, so he's going to have to try to figure out a few things and just see how the playoffs are different, because, you know, that's the other thing we always talk about, like inexperienced players, that you've got two rookie coaches right now in Brad Stevens and David Blatt. Neither of these guys have played in the playoffs. And I think that Brad Stevens is the type of guy who he'll come up with some sort of scheme. He'll try something out just to try to disrupt the Cavs and cause them, make it a little bit uncomfortable. But again, over the course of a game and a series, I just think the Cavs have got too much. And that's why I picked them for a sweep. I think LeBron's pretty motivated. He's pretty determined. And I just think, you know, the disparity in talent is really going to be on show as the series goes on.
I don't want to dwell too much on that series because I feel like there's so much. Once we come back around, I'm going to make you make picks for the next few rounds. We won't have to go into detail on this one, but you don't have to give me a full breakdown detail of a series that won't happen for a month. I promise. All right. So the last series in the East. I've argued with Tom Ziller and Zach Lowe about this. I understand why, and I've talked to you. I talked to you about this in the last podcast. I understand why people want to rejigger the conferences and the divisions. I have a hard time justifying my argument because I don't want them to do it. When I look at the difference between the number three seed in the East and the West, Chicago gets Milwaukee, who finished 500, and good for them. And the Clippers get the Spurs. So certainly there's a difference there. I guess my main question about the Bulls-Bucks series, what do we expect anything from Rose? Is that just like a feel-good story at this point? I think it's funny how Kidd has come from, oh, he's a horrible coach, to being this incredible coach. It kind of tells you a little bit about how maybe difficult Brooklyn was to coach last year, for what he's been able to do with Milwaukee. Does Milwaukee have a chance this series, or is this a tune-up series for the Bulls the way kind of the Celtics are for the Cavs?
Well, I think the Bucks are a chance. I mean, I seem to be in the minority here because I think most people feel that the Bulls are just too good, especially Pau Gasol's been fantastic and Rose coming back means they're pretty much at full strength, even though, you know, Rose is not 100% healthy and certainly not back to the player he was a couple of years ago when he was the MVP. So, you know, the Bulls are coming in pretty, pretty strong right now. But the thing about Milwaukee is no one expected them to come anywhere near finishing in the playoffs this year. You know, with a new coach, young players like that, they lost Jabari Parker early on as well. People, I think, were sort of figuring that at some point the Bucks, you know, the wheels would fall off and they'd sort of tumble back into the lottery. But they've been resilient, and that's been because they've been playing good defense. And credit to Jason Kidd, because he has come in and, you know, it was a disaster in the end there in Brooklyn what happened. You know, the way after 1 year he fell out with the ownership and he left under pretty, you know, nefarious circumstances. But he's done a very good job in Milwaukee, and I have to give him a lot of credit for that. And that's why I think the Bucks are a chance, because if you aren't great on offense, as the Bucks aren't, but you are very good on defense, then in the playoffs, that's probably a little bit more important, especially in the first round, because at least it shows that you can defend the other team. And, you know, Derrick Rose's shooting, even when he was, you know, back into the full swing earlier in the season, wasn't great. Jimmy Butler's had an injury concern or two as well. And Pau Gasol, man, as great as he's been, it's not like he's going out there every night and being the power he was sort of 3 or 4 years ago. He's been very, very good, but they're going to need other help from other players if they are really going to, you know, hammer the Bucks. So, I think the Bulls to win this one in seven, because I really think the Bucks being a bit of an unknown quality and the Bulls just being a little bit sort of unsure how to handle them might just extend the series. But one thing obviously in the Bulls' favour is they're basically going to have home court advantage every game. Yeah, you know, every single time you see the Bulls in Milwaukee, there's always as many, if not more, Bulls fans than Bucks fans. So, you know, I'm actually really excited for this series because I love seeing guys like Giannis, who, you know, he's had some incredible highlights this year. I mean, he's still got a lot of work to do on his game. But a guy like him, you just don't know when he hasn't been to, he hasn't been to the playoffs before. So he hasn't been through any sort of real heartache or anything like that. He's going out there fresh, and hopefully for him, he can really produce. Because sometimes these young guys, when they don't know any better, they just go out and play as hard as they can, and things work out for them. So, you know, I may be dead wrong in this series, and hopefully not, but I would love to see the Bucks at least give their fans a little insight into the future, that once this team gets a little bit more experience and the players mature a little bit more, that they are going to be a competitive team for the next 3 or 4 years at least.
What can we reasonably hope out of Rose, and not just the series, but the playoffs?
Well, I hope he just gets through unscathed. I really, you know, I think that's probably the best case scenario for Bulls fans, because I don't think they're a chance to win. I don't think they're a chance to get past Cleveland for one, and then certainly not past, you know, Golden State or whoever makes it out of the West. I think for Derrick Rose, it's more important that they can just see that he actually is okay and his body is on the recovery, and, you know, next season when he gets another full summer under his belt and you know, it's pre-season training, that then come next season he'll be close to 100% again, because I think that's really the most important thing. He's had so many setbacks and had to overcome various injuries, you know, these compensation injuries, that you just want to see that he can be back to something like the player he was, because I don't think we'll ever see that same explosiveness fully. I think he's probably lost that part of his game, but it doesn't mean that he's lost his entire game. You know, you look at guys like Grant Hill, and you know, he was able to still be a very, very good player after he overcame all those injuries. So I think for Derrick Rose, I mean, I'm certainly not, you know, kicking him to the curb or anything right now, but I think his body has changed and he's going to have to learn to deal with a different part of his game. But he's still a very, very talented player, very important player. And, you know, he's still in the top 10 point guards in the league if he's 100% healthy, for sure. So if I'm a Bulls fan, it's kind of looking towards next season a little bit, because I really don't think they're a chance to win it anyway this year. So you just want to take some positives and feel that there is something you can really look forward to next season.
Okay, I was going to get into something about Tibbs, because that whole situation seems like a mess to me. But well, let's not focus too much on the Bulls. We'll move on from that, and then when we're previewing the NBA Finals between the Bulls and the Mavs, we'll discuss the Tibbs situation, because I know that's going to be your pick. All right, let's move over to the West. Golden State, New Orleans. All told, as much as it would have been fun to see Maniac Westbrook go maniac in the playoffs, also, I'm actually kind of okay with New Orleans getting this eighth spot. I kind of subscribe to the theory that it's good to see. We're going to see Davis in the playoffs forever, so it's probably good for him to get a little bit of it now. But would Oklahoma State given New Orleans more of a problem, Golden State more of a problem than New Orleans, or really does it make that much of a difference?
Well, to be honest, I think the Warriors probably would have preferred to see the Oklahoma City Thunder, because Russell Westbrook, I mean, he's been fantastic this season. He's been brilliant, but he's also sort of got that that craziness to him, which opens up opportunities for other players. So right. I really think with Anthony Davis, it's like, man, this guy is so difficult to defend. If he gets really hot, and we know that he's added that mid-range jump shot to his game this season, that could be the only thing that somehow disrupts the Golden State Warriors. I mean, I don't think the Pelicans can win this series, because Davis simply doesn't have enough healthy bodies around him. Drew Holiday's back, but he's missed a lot of time. Ryan Anderson really has struggled this season. You know, Tyreek Evans has been good. He can be a very good player. You don't want him shooting the ball all that much, but if he's driving and penetrating, then he's causing a few more problems. But Anthony Davis, you know, I mean, he is easily in the top three or four players in the league right now. And if any time you've got a player of that ability on your team, you're a champ for sure. You know, you just don't know what could happen. But the Warriors have played such incredible team basketball this year that you know, you feel they can overcome him. They've got great defense as well. I mean, they've been in the top two in offense and defense all season. So, you know, it's not like the Warriors have holes in their game anywhere. But in Anthony Davis, I mean, you just have to look at, you know, sort of playoff series in the past, like the Golden State Warriors know only too well when they upset the Mavericks in 2007. Like, you would never predict an upset in this case when the team on top has been so dominant all season long, but you just never know. So, I mean, I'm mainly excited just to see Anthony Davis, see some more games of Anthony Davis, because he's been so great this season. But I think they can steal a game, New Orleans, but I really, it's very, very hard to see them winning four times out of seven against the Warriors. But either way, I just hope we get to see a series that's competitive, and you get a sort of a tease for what Anthony Davis is going to bring to the playoffs in the next 3 or 4 years, because I really think now that he's in there, you know, the Pelicans will probably make a few changes in the offseason. But either way, they've still got some good young players. They just need to stay healthy. Monty Williams has done a great job. They've got great support at home. You saw that win over San Antonio to get them into the playoffs. You know, if the fans turn up in New Orleans, they really make that arena, you know, an intimidating environment. So it's very, very exciting for the Pelicans. And you know, when you've got a young franchise guy like Davis, I mean, his contract is up soon, and he'll obviously sign an extension, or he can get the most money out of New Orleans. But you don't want to give him any reason to want to leave that organization, and to get into the playoffs, give him a taste, and hopefully add another piece or two in the off-season. that will really go a long way in keeping him in New Orleans and giving this team a chance to really compete for the championship in, you know, over the next 5 or 10 years or however long Anthony Davis is there, because we've seen already right now what he can do at both ends of the floor. He can really dominate a game. You just wonder if he's probably not quite experienced enough to be able to overcome a team like the Warriors right now. But either way, this is what you really want to see in playoff basketball. You know, the unknown guy who's never been there before going up against the best and just seeing how both teams handle it.
Yeah, and one thing I like about this series, too, it gives the fans a chance to warm up a little bit at Oracle Arena, too. Because, you know, even before you know, Golden State, even when they made that a little bit of run a couple of years ago, you know, that crowd, like when I think of NBA crowds, that's actually what I think of what they're capable of and how loud it can be. And so I can't wait. We'll see where we pick the rest of these series. But I think if Golden State gets into the Western Conference Finals, I feel like they're going to have two series to warm themselves up because I just can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the Warriors. They've always been that team, you know, that people kind of have fallen in love with because they've had those upsets over the Mavericks. As I mentioned, they did it to the Nuggets a couple of years ago. And if you go back further, they did it to the San Antonio Spurs in 91 and the Jazz in 89. Like, they've got that sort of that ability to just really get fans to support them. And now they're actually the favorites, and it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But every single game at Oracle this year, I've said to people, it looks more like a soccer crowd. You know, they almost cheer every single basket. Everyone's high-fiving and celebrating. And you don't see that in a lot of NBA arenas where fans just get so involved and so engaged from the first basket until the last. And they've also had those great moments like with Klay Thompson when he went for 37 points in a quarter. I mean, that sort of stuff, we'll never see that again. And that happened this year. And, you know, it's just another great storyline for the Golden State Warriors and why you want to see them cash in now and convert this fantastic season they've had into some playoff success. And, you know, whether or not they go on to win the championship or not, you just want to see that this season wasn't just about the regular season and they didn't just sort of get hot or have things fall their way. They are a very good team, very well coached, and they've got great structure and hopefully all those things can come together for them.
All right, so let's we'll move over to Portland and Memphis. Memphis, kind of the perpetual sleeper team. It feels like I've been talking about them as we've all been talking about them as a sleeper team for several years now. But it is strange because, you know, Chris Mannix from SI wrote about this idea that, you know, as great as Memphis is and as solid as they play, it still feels like. He called them the last bastion of bully ball, and I think I think the idea of that is that, like, you know, they are this. They feels like they play old Eastern Conference playoff basketball a little bit in a league that's kind of moved on from that. A lot, not moved on, but certainly has added more of a Euro style to it. When you look at this series, is Memphis just going to wear Portland down? That's kind of the way it looks to me. Portland, a team that finally seemed like they finally got some depth, and then Wesley Matthews got hurt, and then Matthews got hurt. Next thing you know, there's no depth for this team at all. Is that how this series goes down? Is Memphis just kind of wears them into the ground?
Yeah, this one's actually a little disappointing in the series for me because of those injuries that the Portland Trailblazers have suffered. And really, prior to that, I felt that the Blazers were starting to establish themselves as a possible challenger for the NBA title. But, you know, they lose Wesley Matthews, Aflalo got injured, Nicholas Batum got injured the other day. Now, you know, Batum may play, and I think he's expected to play, in fact, but he probably won't be 100%. And that's just where I think the Blazers are going to struggle. They just don't have the depth right now. But having said that, Memphis has got a few problems of their own as well. I mean, Mike Conley hasn't played now for a couple of weeks. He's dealing with an ankle injury. He is expected to play, although Dave Yeager said on for Wednesday night's game he wouldn't have played if that was a playoff game. So there's certainly some concern about him. Tony Allen hasn't played in the month of April, so he is also expected to play, I believe, but even if he does, you know, he won't be 100%, and he'll need a game or two to sort of get his legs back underneath him. So it's this series, you know, around Christmas, it would have been very, very exciting because both teams really, really were playing good basketball, but right now, you sort of look at it and you think, man, I just don't think the Blazers can hang for a deep series with the Grizzlies, especially the way the Grizzlies played. And even when both teams are at full strength, the Grizzlies actually handled them pretty well. So, you know, you mentioned about the Grizzlies playing sort of more old Eastern Conference style. I've said before that Marc Gasol, he plays like a bit of a slower Kevin McHale in a lot of ways. You know, the way that he can move his body and score easily under the basket. He's got those a variety of moves that really help him out. So, you know, Zach Randolph as well, you know, very, very good player. I enjoy watching him so much because he's one of the few players that really plays under the rim for a big guy in the NBA. You know, Zach barely gets off the ground when he jumps, but he very rarely gets his shot blocked as well, because he's able to use his body and able to use his rump to his advantage, where he can just kind of, you know, move guys out the way without drawing an offensive foul and just get his shot off. And that's what makes him so effective. So I've gone towards the Grizzlies on this series. I think they're going to win it in five games, just because I think the Blazers, Damian Lillard is going to have to carry such a heavy workload, LaMarcus Aldridge as well. Aldridge was great last year against the Houston Rockets in the first round, but he's obviously dealing with a bit of a hand injury or his thumb injury as well. And you know, you just look at the Blazers and you think, man, if this team was healthy, you really wonder what the limit could be on them, because they could be very, very good. But unfortunately, injuries have happened, and I think that just takes away from what they potentially could be.
Yeah, Portland is always that team. Portland is always that team. Even with an entirely different roster, Portland is always that team. So, sorry, guys. All right, let's move to Houston and Dallas. I have to say, I feel like if there's going to be a weird upset, it's going to be this one. I don't think I would still pick Houston, but like, it still feels like this is a team that relies so much on Harden doing everything. And not to think, like, I think the idea of playoff Rondo is a myth. But certainly, you know, Dallas has a terrific coach, an experienced roster, and if there's a team that could throw a curveball at him, I feel like Dallas could.
Yeah, and if you look at the standings alone, you say, okay, well, it's two versus number seven, so number two should be the favorite. But really, the Mavs still won 50 games, and the Rockets only won 56. It's not like the Dallas, you know, Dallas kind of fell into the playoffs or anything like that. They've had a good season. And again, you were talking earlier about how if they changed the conference alignment or the playoff setup, the Mavericks with 50 wins, I mean, they did much better than the Raptors, who finished fourth in the conference with 49. So I think if you look at the whole big picture, Dallas had a very good season. You know, they won 50 games again, which is something they hadn't done for the last couple of years. And that's, I think, a bit of a high watermark. It's like, once you win 50 games, you're showing that you're pretty much better than a lot of teams in the league. So, yeah, I agree that this one could go either way. And Rick Carlisle did a fantastic job last year pushing the San Antonio Spurs to seven. And I think this is where he's going to be at his best, where he can really scheme. It's not just sort of one game and then it's a different team in a couple of nights on the road or anything like that. You get an opportunity to plan and prepare two games at a time in each city, and obviously if it extends, then it changes back to 1-1-1. And I think that's where a guy like Rick Carlisle can implement some sort of plan on James Harden and say, right, this is how we're going to defend him. Let the other guys shoot it as much as they want, and if James Harden gets it, then just trap him and get the ball out of his hands or something to that effect, because that's, I think, the way you're going to beat them. James Harden, you know, he has to redeem himself really for the Rockets last season, because he didn't shoot the ball very well. And, you know, they had home court advantage against the Blazers and they lost. So it's a big series, and there's going to be a lot of... this is a real rivalry as well, because it is like the two cities. Houston and Dallas have a pretty big rivalry. Mark Cuban and Daryl Morey have had plenty of back and forth jibes at each other over the years. And they played not too long ago, and there's always a little bit of tension in these two games, between these two teams. So I'm excited for it. I mean, you mentioned playoff Rondo. I mean, this is why they got him. This is when they expect him to deliver, because he really hasn't had any significant impact on that team since he came over in the trade. They're about as good as they were before they got him, you know. So people have been sort of bigging up this, you know, Rondo. He's coming out. He's out of contract at the end of this season. So he really needs to show what he's capable of doing. And you know, he wants a max contract. And if he's going to get one, he's going to earn it in the playoffs. And he's going to do it by, you know, obviously the Mavericks have to get out of the first round and go deep into the playoffs if he's ordered to do that. So I'm excited for this series because, you know, Dwight Howard as well, he's at a stage of his career now. I mentioned this on the show yesterday, where you're kind of waiting for him every year to sort of put his stamp on a team. And, you know, last year he played well against the Blazers, but they lost. You know, he's in his second year now in Houston, and he's in his 11th season in the league. And it's like, okay, you know, you're no longer just a guy. You can't be, you know, potentially, you can't just live off potential forever. You have to actually cash in at some point. That's why the Rockets chase him. They throw the big dollars at him. Now they want to see some return on that investment. And James Harden as well. I mean, he's in his third season in Houston, and teams, you know, you keep looking at these teams, think, okay, they're going to get together, and now they have their opportunity to have home court advantage, you know, finish second, as we mentioned. So what does that all mean? You know, does that mean they're a good team, or are they going to be like it was last year where they came up short? We'll find out. But this is one series that I'll be watching pretty closely, because it could go either way, and it really could have an impact on what that team does going forward.
is there an actual possibility of playoff Rondo? I find myself fascinated by it just because, you know, I mean, like, this kind of feels like this old sports writing trope to, like, there's a button that you hit and you turn into playoff Rondo and you power up and you eat the mushroom. But it feels like even if he actually, like, does the team like him? The coach seems to have issues. Like, is it even set up for him to take over in that way?
Well, see, I agree with you. I don't think there's such a thing as a switch unless you're someone like LeBron James who really can impact the game by being passive. I don't think someone like Rondo has the ability to just sort of decide, well, he's been pretty, you know, he's been mediocre for the Mavericks since he arrived. All of a sudden, he's going to come out and deliver, 25 points and, you know, 10 rebounds and 12 assists. I just don't see it because I haven't seen it. And, you know, when he got traded, there was a lot of people talking like, oh, this is it, the Mavericks are a title contender. And there are other people like myself who said, I don't think he makes much difference to that team at all because he, as good as he is as far as his ability to penetrate and get inside, he is so heavily flawed in his inability to shoot that it really takes away from their offense. And their numbers have dropped since the trade came, you know, because defenders and defenses look at Rondo and go, well, you can shoot as much as you want. Now, he might knock down one or two shots, but the problem is then it almost works against the Dallas strategy because then it's like, okay, well, even if you do knock down one or two shots, we're going to let you shoot 20 times a game if you want because you don't have that ability to really sort of burn a team by doing that. And he won't go to the free throw line because he's shooting terrible percentage from the free throw line, like 30, I think he's 32% since he joined the Mavericks. And that hurts your team as well because if he's not being aggressive, looking to try to score baskets like that, then defenders know. It's like, okay, let him do whatever he wants. As long as he's not in there, you know, opening up opposition with his ability to penetrate and getting, you know, 15 assists that are leading to easy baskets, if he's not becoming a threat in other ways, then defenders know that you don't have to worry about him too much. And I think that's one thing I've noticed, like Dirk Nowitzki, for example. He's still a great player, still a very, very good player, but if you're going to dump the ball off to him, and then the defenders can afford to double team him without the threat being that he can kick it out to a guy who can knock down a three pointer, then it really makes it harder for Dirk to have his impact on the game because Dirk relishes the opportunity to shoot when, you know, he's got that basically undefendable, unguardable shot where he can fall back and knock it in. And if you don't have, if you've got two guys on him, then it makes it harder for him to get that shot off. And again, the whole thing like with Dwight Howard and players like that is you want to bomb the ball into him. And then when the defense collapses, he throws it out to Corey Brewer or whoever is out there, Patrick Beverley when he was healthy, to knock down an open three. Rondo doesn't give you that opportunity in Dallas, and that's why it's going to be very interesting to see how the Rockets defend Rondo by saying, shoot as much as you want because we're just going to let you shoot and we're going to use that other defender on someone else like Dirk or Chandler Parsons if he's healthy or Monte Ellis, of course. So there's a lot of pressure on Rondo for sure in this series, but you know if he can produce that playoff Rondo, then good on him. And obviously the Mavericks will have a lot of success. But if he can't and is exposed for being, you know, his inability to shoot the ball, then it's going to cause a lot of problems for the Mavericks, and it's going to be very difficult for them to win that series.
So are you predicting Houston?
I think Houston. Yeah, I think it will go probably six or seven games, and I give most of that credit to Rick Carlisle because I think Rick Carlisle again. No one really thought the Mavericks had any chance against the Spurs last year, but I think he's got something up his sleeve and he'll figure out some sort of plan. And just the way the Mavericks are, like they won 50 games. They're not a bad team. They're not a bad team at all. They're not championship contenders, but they're a very good team. And the Rockets, I'm not overly convinced that they are the finished product right now. If Dwight Howard can be an impact player on both ends, then it changes things. But again, I just don't have complete faith in Dwight to be able to go all, you know, back-to-back games, like, you know, game in, game out, really, really to deliver. So we'll see. I mean, as I say, I'm looking forward to that series. It should be exciting.
Okay, that's all of them. Oh, no, wait, I think there's one more. Certainly, Clippers-Spurs in the first round just feels wrong. It just feels unfortunate. It feels just because, you know, it's not even so much just the Clippers because, you know, you don't feel bad for the Spurs as much as you feel bad for the Clippers in a lot of ways to have to deal, to go through all that trouble. Because, of course, there was all the talk of, I think you had a great vine on Twitter of Popovich realizing that, oh, we're going from second to sixth, which I thought was very funny. But to me, the Clippers, you know, you go through all this trouble to get the home court and win your division, and you get the Spurs in the first round. To me, is this the epic matchup that people want it to be, or is it just feeling like it should have happened later?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Look, if you're going to win the championship, I think you have to figure you're going to have to beat the San Antonio Spurs at some point, you know, because we just know that they always seem to be there no matter what the situation. They weren't playing great basketball in, you know, sort of December and January, but since then they've really turned it on. And obviously, you know, health is a huge thing. Patty Mills has been back. Kawhi Leonard's been not just one of the best defenders in the league, but in the MVP conversation as well at some point. So, you know, they've got so many weapons. And for the Clippers, I think that their starting five is pretty good and is comparable to the San Antonio Spurs, but the big problem is they just aren't deep enough. You know, once they go to their bench and they've got Turkaloo and Austin Rivers and Big Baby Davis, I mean, Jamal Crawford, there's no doubt Jamal Crawford's a fantastic six-man, but he just can't do it all by himself. And that's where I think the Clippers are going to struggle, because in the playoffs, even though your rotations tighten up a little bit, you still need to be able to have those guys who come on and be decent players that can really contribute. And you know, I just can't see that from the Clippers, unfortunately. And you know, I look at the Chris Paul team right now, and if you go back to 2008, the New Orleans Hornets, they had David West, comparable to Blake Griffin right now, Tyson Chandler, comparable to DeAndre Jordan, and J.J. Redick is kind of comparable to Peja Stojakovic, and they took the Spurs to seven games. So Chris Paul, you know, he's been in this situation with a very similar sort of roster build-up or makeup in the past and been able to push a team, but just couldn't get over the line. And I just don't think that the Clippers can do it, because the Spurs can throw Danny Green at Chris Paul. They can throw Tony Parker. I mean, he's not the greatest defender. Obviously, got Kawhi Leonard. Everyone, though, can just sort of get in Chris Paul's face and disrupt him. And I think that's the problem, that the Clippers don't have the same sort of ability to slow down the San Antonio Spurs. And, yeah, I said this on the show as well. Like, the Spurs have... Excuse me, the Clippers have home court advantage, but I think they're the underdog in this series. I mean, I think the Spurs are the favourite, and, you know, at some point, Chris Paul, he's just going to look around and go, man, you know, I can't even get to the second round, let alone get out of the second round. And he's at this stage of his career, he's what, his 10th season now, where, you know, at some point, he needs to be really challenging for a championship, but it just doesn't look like it's going to happen this year. And, you know, it's hard to really see, unless they make a big trade in the off-season or get someone else in there and sign as a free agent, how they get better than teams like the Spurs and better than teams like the Warriors. And, you know, I just don't know with the Clippers. I think that they are probably, you know, again, they're better than a lot of teams in the league, but they just really can't hang with the super elite teams. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to be another season for them where they come up empty.
Wasn't the whole idea of Doc Rivers is he was supposed to, like, they don't look that different. They almost look maybe a little worse than before Rivers got that. Obviously, they've won more games, but, you know, the way that they, like, their bench is so, his son's hanging around there, and the bench is so weak, and it feels like, in a lot of ways, has Doc Rivers really been that much better for this team?
I mean, that's a fair question, and the answer is probably not, you know, and he's taken on both roles, you know, he's the president of basketball operations or general manager, whatever. I mean, basically, he decides the player personnel moves, and you have to wonder if they are any better. I mean, yeah, they've got a very, very good starting five unit, but, God, that bench. I mean, you know, like I say, Turkle is lucky to be in the league. Big Baby Davis probably wouldn't be in the league if it wasn't Doc Rivers coaching there. You know, other guys, Austin Rivers, I mean, that's his son, and, you know, the Pelicans basically gave him to the Clippers. I mean, yeah, that's the concern. They just, Doc Rivers, I always think you need to have separation between your general manager and your coach, because, you know, you need to have the same vision and you need to work together, but you need to have someone else who's, you know, building the team and then someone else who's coaching the team. And, you know, Doc Rivers, like, he did a great job in Boston. There's no doubt he was fantastic for them, but obviously it helped when Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett came along, because he was able then to be a bit more aggressive with the way he coached. And it's very, very difficult. Like, it wouldn't matter if you put Greg Popovich on the Boston Celtics. They wouldn't get past the Cleveland Cavaliers. But, you know, it comes down to talent. You know, the Clippers have got they've got a good, talented starting five, but other than that, they really don't have much. And, you know, Doc Rivers, I think he needs to probably step back at the end of the season and hire someone who can do that. And, you know, again, you have to work together. Look at Popovich and R.C. Buford in San Antonio. I mean, they work in cohesion with each other. They really understand what they want from their players and the type of players they want, and they also understand that you need to get guys who are really impactful but who can come off the bench without really sacrificing or wanting that bigger role and understanding that they're not the superstar of the team. So But having said all that, I mean, like Stutz has been talking about on our show a lot, that maybe Chris Paul can just have a series like Dirk Nowitzki of 2011 where things fall his way and, you know, Chris Paul just totally dominates and takes over. And, you know, because Chris Paul is still, you know, he's in the top handful of players. He's in that top five. And some people are talking about him being the MVP as well this year. I don't think he's going to get it, but he's probably being overlooked a little bit in the fact that, you know, it's the glory seasons have come from Houston's James Harden and Golden State's Steph Curry. But Chris Paul still has tremendous respect and, you know, amongst the media and obviously amongst the NBA players personnel as well. But, you know, I just can't see them, even if they get past the Spurs, I mean, what's going to happen after that? You know, it's very, very difficult to see them getting to the conference finals at best.
All right. So we've got all your first round predictions. So we'll just be brief. You don't have to go too much, but we're going to get to your finals here. So Atlanta, Toronto. You like Atlanta?
Yes, I'll take Atlanta. Yes.
Okay. And Cleveland, Chicago.
Yeah, Cavs.
All right. Golden State, Memphis. That seems like a fun contrast series.
Yeah, that would be fun if everyone's healthy for the Grizzlies. That'd be a pretty fun series. But I'll take the Warriors.
Okay, and then that gives us Houston, San Antonio.
Yeah, Spurs again. I want to sort of believe in the Rockets, but they just had two games against San Antonio, and even though one was only a 1-point victory, the other one the Rockets got absolutely drilled in San Antonio. And again, I think the Greg Popovich. I mean, that would be another very spicy series, another Texas matchup. That would be great, but I think the Spurs are just again, they're just too good, too experienced, too disciplined for the Rockets.
All right, so that would leave us a final four of Atlanta, Cleveland, Golden State, and San Antonio. I have to say there'd be a little part of me that would be, you know, to me, the best two stories in NBA this year, team-wise, have been Golden State and Atlanta. Like, that is, like, and I would be a little bit of a bummer to see, all right, finals are the Spurs and LeBron again. Like, that would be really fun, don't get me wrong. That would be a fun thing to see. But it would just be like, oh, yep, there's that, like, we've had this breakthrough season. Look at what these guys have done. But, nope, sorry, it's LeBron and the Spurs again. If it got to those final four, do you think that's what would happen?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, Cleveland, like, this is the thing about the Atlanta Hawks. The people who have sort of criticized them saying they don't have that one superstar that might be a problem in the playoffs. I don't necessarily agree with that, but when I look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, they have LeBron James, and I think that really just sways that series. So yeah. I definitely take the Cavs. I'm going to go out on a limb. I mean, the Warriors have the best record of the season. So I'm going to say the Warriors beat the Spurs finally awesome. In the playoffs. Yeah, I'm going to say the Warriors do it and they make it to the finals because, you know, I'm the same with you. I mean, I love the San Antonio Spurs. It's such an exciting team to watch and they play the game the right way. But, yeah, I don't want to see LeBron and the Spurs again. I would much rather see LeBron and I'd love to see Steph Curry and that roarical crowd we mentioned in Golden State. I would love to see the Warriors in the finals. So I'm going to say Warriors Cavs.
And then who would you pick then?
I will say... Warriors in seven.
Woo. I feel like that place might get a little loud.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's very hard to pick against LeBron James. You know, I mean, the people who don't like him or whatever, they obviously don't respect and understand just how good he's been for the game. And just because you don't win the finals doesn't mean you're a bad player or anything like that. I mean, that you know, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, all these guys lost in the finals. Obviously, Michael Jordan never did. But, you know, the fact that LeBron just shows up every year for me is what makes him an incredible player and what I love watching about him because it's so difficult to turn up to the finals. And he did it 4 years in a row in Miami. And he's been there, obviously, with the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2007. Like, he's a phenomenal, phenomenal player. And when it's all said and done, he'll be in the top five, definitely, of all time because he's just, he's a fantastic player, but I'm going to say the Warriors because I would love to see the Warriors, you know, turn this season into a win and and win the championship. That'll be great to see.
It's you know, for the record, like the Jordan never lost in the finals thing is always so weird to me. Like I guarantee you, if somehow the Wizards would have gotten into the finals when he was there, they'd have lost. They would have lost. They would have lost. That's what would have happened. So.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, that's the thing about Jordan. Like, I still look back at games, you know, when they have the hardwood classics on, and I still look at YouTube clips and stuff, and I just think, God, this guy, I mean, what a phenomenal, like, athlete he was in the world. Like, he just incredible that he was able to get his team, at, you know, in his advancing years as well. Like, he took a year and a half off, he comes back, and then wins three more. I mean, It really is incredible. And people say, well, he would have won a championship if he'd stayed. But we'll never know the answer. I don't think that would have happened anyway, because I think that at some point, just the playing in the finals year in, year out would have caught up to him. And in some ways, that year and a half he took off, I think, was great for him, because it gave his legs a chance to rest and get fresh again. And the way that he won that game in Utah as well, like stealing Karl Malone, going down there, scoring that basket. Like, if you're a basketball fan, that's what's so beautiful about the game that we love. I mean, it's seeing those sort of moments that you'll never, ever forget. And, heartbreak for Utah fans and for the Jazz fans to be so close. But, for those of us who love Jordan and just love everything about what he did for the game, I mean, it's just a beautiful thing.
I suppose we would end up on Jordan as we wrap up here. But all right, Lee, thanks, man. I'm excited to. Are you? I'm curious. Where will you watch all of the games? Will you be at home? Are you going to the studio? What's your setup for the weekend?
Well, good question. I still haven't really figured that out, because, as you know, I have a 3-year-old at home, so
yes.
I can't really just plonk myself down on the couch at from 12 until. 10 o'clock at night. I'm going to have to figure out a way to.
For what it's worth, if you tie his arms together and duct tape his mouth, you absolutely can do that.
Yeah.
Particularly if you haven't just set up an IV, he'll be fine. Put Chuggington in front of his face or Thomas, and he'll forget that you ever existed.
Well, he's at a stage though now where he likes you to really sit there and watch with him, and he wants to tell you what's happening and that. So
my kid's the same way.
I think my plan's going to have to be, I'm going to take him to the park in the morning and run him around as much as I can, so it's a good 2-hour nap out of him. That's one game, and then I don't know how I'm going to do the other one, but it's always a fun challenge anyway. I mean, you're right. I might be able to squeeze at least one game out of him just with him watching Peppa Pig or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah, I have a 3-year-old as well, and I have the advantage of when it comes to baseball playoff season, those games start like 3 hours after he was already asleep. So that's the advantage I have there. I'm of course in the rest of the day, but all right, Lee, thank you so much. We'll stick around. We'll do a little trivia, but I'm delighted to have you on. As you know, I'm a huge, huge fan. And listen, once these playoffs get over, for crying out, we both have 3-year-olds. Let's go make them go run around in a corner together while we watch old Jordan highlights.
That's the way to do it, isn't it? You have to share the wealth with other parents. So,
exactly. You know.
Put those 2 3-year-olds that run around, they'll go crazy with each other, and then we can just sit back and relax.
Exactly. That sounds good. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. And of course, we'll do some trivia, but thanks. All right, thank you to Lee Ellis. You can follow him on Twitter at Lee Ellis, LEIGHELLIS. And, of course, watch him on The Starters on NBA TV, or do as I do, because I have Charter Communications, which doesn't have NBA TV, much to my fury. I listen to the podcast every day and just fast forward for when Tess does the highlights, because I can't see them. Anyway, this is Will Ace Experience Podcast. The music's by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. As I said, it'll be another week until we're back, until Allison Fitter and I get into our weekly baseball podcast. Enjoy the NBA playoffs and enjoy the trivia podcast, which is coming up for me now, you in a couple of days.